Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes, and with me, as always, Fred Moreland. How are you, sir?
Doing well. How is the up north that you told me you were going to?
It was not Moose Jaw.
That's a shame.
I went up to the North Shore, Lake Superior, and okay. You know what? It was fun. We brought Cheddar, our Lab Pity Greyhound mix, to go hiking with us, and he had a good time. I think we figured out, because he's a rescue, so we don't know everything about him, but he didn't have the best start to life, and I think his former owner might have been a redheaded male, because he borked like very aggressively at two redheaded dudes.
Oh.
Everybody else he thought was cool as hell. So that was interesting. And Cheddar's hanging out with us right now as we're doing the show, and he got to watch World's End with me. And
Wrestle Dream.
You know what? My brain is so fried.
It wasn't me this time. It's the only thing I care about.
It's the middle of football season. One of the reasons why I have not been able to be on every show lately, and it takes a toll on you.
Yeah.
But Fred, we are here to talk about Wrestle Dream. I almost said World's End again, because that's how destroyed my brain capacity is.
Oh, brother.
This was,
let's go, baby.
This was arguably the greatest American pay-per-view in history.
Really? Like
arguably.
You could, yeah.
If you have the conversation about it, you're not told you're an idiot. This is like, you actually have to think about it.
It's on the. I would put it on the outer reaches of the convo, I think. But
probably top five. Or a borderline at best, because it's a top five AEW pay-per-view.
Is it? I think it's top 10. I don't know if I'd put it top five, but...
Oh, let me kind of give my general
thought. Sure, yeah, go for it, and then I'll tell you wrong.
Why don't you pull up the cage match rankings
I'm working
and see,
on
where
it.
See where it is. Okay. Because one of the things here is there was no... One of the things that AEW pay-per-views have struggled with, even the great ones, is there's a down match. None of these matches were bad. The lowest match was 3.5 stars, and you could argue that it was a 4-star match. And everything was just really, really good. It peaked really high. It had a phenomenal show ending, and I think that might be why people are, and we'll get to that, why people might not love this pay-per-view as much as others, but it was unique. It had a lot of like thematic elements to really build up with the company, which, you know what, maybe that doesn't matter so much as far as grading out singular pay-per-views, but I do think it matters within the context of the promotion.
I
just thought that this was a tremendous show with great angles, continuity. They did not like a couple pay-per-views ago, maybe it was All Out, where they had like 5 distraction or interference finishes.
Like, yeah,
there was one on this show, just one. And I think stuff like that kind of helps separate it from other pay-per-views of the past. And like, well, what does Cage Match think about this? Where does it rank?
Cage Match has it as the 17th best AEW pay-per-view of all time.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was really good, but I was very surprised when you said top five, just because of how many great pay-per-views AEW's had. So, yeah, I thought it was good, a really, really great show, but not like in the all-time conversation. I just think it's like a notch below. But yeah, it was really damn good. I think you're right about the main card, that it was a tremendously strong strong event. Let's see, let me filter this over to just the papes. Yeah, so WrestleDream is 91st all time, according to the cage match of all promotions.
Maybe right, I need to go back and look at some things, but it also doesn't surprise me that it's as low as it is, even though I'm also surprised because the ending is a little controversial. It's not a happy-go-lucky. It's not a, hey, this guy just won the title. It's divisive to end a show like that. But I also think it's a good thing. We'll get to that. But Fred, we have to go with the old Rich Craig question. Did you watch the pre-show?
I did watch the pre-show. Now, I did miss the Anna Jay Harley Cameron match, which I'm currently trying to watch right now, but I keep getting distracted, so I'm not sure if I'll get it down this time through. But people were very down on that. I can't really comment on it, but I will say that the other matches on the pre-show were all good. One kind of pushes into, if you like AEW or this style of match, you should check it out. And the other two, I wouldn't particularly recommend like going out of your way for them, but I think they were good, they were fun, and I'll take that. So we opened with Brian Cage against Atlantis Jr., and this was pretty much exactly what you would imagine when you think of a match between Brian Cage and Atlantis Jr. I thought they worked pretty well together. I thought it was a good match. I think I went 3.5 on it. So if you are looking for some free wrestling, that's up on the YouTubes, and you can check that out for sure. But I liked it. Brian Cage beat Atlantis Jr. to take the Ring of Honor World Television Championship, which came, this match came about, I think last Friday, maybe it was, at Arena Mexico. They did an angle where Atlantis Jr. Was carted out after a kayfabe neck injury, and he showed up with his neck all taped up. You know, I'm sure that'll be the kayfabe excuse for the loss, which, hey, nothing wrong with that. But I thought it was a fun match. I mean, Brian Cage is not like a Hall of Fame level worker, but I do think he's a very fun worker the vast majority of the time. He's not exactly going to give you a 5-star classic, but he's going to give you a fun 3.5 to 4-star match where he just does a bunch of cool stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that in my mind. So, and Atlantis Jr. looked pretty good. So, fun match. This was followed up by Harley Cameron, Anna Jay. Now, that's sitting at a 4.55 on Cage Match, which for a big promotion women's wrestling match is pretty low. You don't really see, unless it's an outright disaster, you don't see much lower because people, you know, try to be positive with the women's divisions, at least a large chunk of the voters. I will say that the finish to this match was an absolute botch. Anna Jay, I am watching it right now just to try to get it in. And Harley Cameron did a soul food without really getting her foot on Anna Jay's chin. So, not great. And then the finish was Anna Jay. I think she hit her move. I believe it was not a roll up, but she did her move, got the pin. But Harley's Cameron's shoulder was not down. And like time froze, and the ref was like, I can't count this, and it's directly towards the camera. And so he told them, he may have, I haven't got to rewatch it yet, but he may have actually pushed on Harley's shoulder. Oh, here it is. I'm actually at the end of this. Yep, he pushed Harley Cameron's shoulder down before counting the pinfall. So that stuff wasn't great. Yeah, this was probably below average. I think Anna looked pretty decent. I think most of the issues were maybe on the Harley end. And I think Harley is very entertaining, but she's hit and miss in the ring, and this was kind of a miss. So probably go 1.5 for it or something. And then let's see, we had the Acclaimed, who will never take a day off, against MXM Collection. And they did a fun gimmick where they promised MXM Collection would show up with someone from the past of Billy Gunn. And who did they get, Tyler, but Rico?
God, that rules.
Rico looked great, man. And he's in his 60s. Dude rules.
I loved Rico because when I first really got into wrestling, it was like 03, 04, and pretty much all I watched was WWE. I did watch a lot of TNA. But like the access I had to stuff like Ring of Honor was incredibly minimal. They never came to Minnesota, and we didn't have high speed internet until like 2010. So streaming things was just not in the cards for me. So like I remember watching Rico. I'm like, this dude rocks. Why isn't he getting more of a push? Well, it's because, you know, Vince being Vince, that was the biggest problem. And I thought it was really cool that they brought Rico back because it made continuity sense. You had the history with Billy Gunn, and he fits really well with the MXM Collection. Like Rico being with Mason and Mansoor, it works. It fits like a glove. It's not being forced. It's not like daddy ass with the Acclaimed. Like that feels a little okay. It didn't feel like supernatural, but Rico with MXM Collection, seamless.
Yeah, like, it was nice little thing. Rico did his spots well, and this was a good match. I wouldn't really like go out of your way for it, but it was a nice 3-star match, I thought, which is for me like 2 is average. So this was a good bit above average. I thought it was fun. Hardly a Matt classic, but enjoyable. And I mean, considering where I've been with the Acclaim for a lot of this year, I'll take that. So and it was a lot better than the Hans angle that MXM did on Collision a couple weeks ago, which was kind of a disaster. But yeah, this was good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. You know what would have been even better? If you had a surprise appearance by Jackie Gata and she just slapped the living hell out of Billy Gunn.
I wonder what Jackie Gata is up to these days.
I don't know, but that would have been a nice little extra touch.
Yeah.
Have her show up in a cop uniform just because that's what Rico used to do in Vegas before getting into pro wrestling.
Yeah.
I know. I did watch this part back because, look, stuff like this rules for a pre-show. It gets you excited. It brings back some nostalgia, and it doesn't mar the top of the card. I love that AEW can do this, and it's like,
yeah.
And they interweave it into today's canon, and I think they do a relatively good job of it. Like, this was great.
Yeah, so that was a fun match. Acclaimed went over, I do believe. You know, they're going to keep floating around the tag title scene. And then we had 8-man tag before the end of the pre-show, which was the Premier Athletes and the Dark Order against the Conglomeration and the Outrunners. And this was just very fun. Again, another match that is not going to go down as a classic or anything. Nothing that I'd really recommend going out of your way for. But it was fun. You know, the Outrunners are a blast. Just a very, very fun match. And it was enjoyable. Everyone did their work well. And you know, this was about exactly what you would expect it would be, but I liked it. It was fun.
Yeah. All right, Fred, let's get to this. Let's get to this main show. Kicking off, AEW's card structure sometimes fascinates me. And they started off with an interesting match. Hangman Page versus Switchblade Jay White. I thought this was great. A very interesting match to kind of open the show. And AEW has shown in the past that they are not afraid to start with a match that's not going to be like super fast paced, high flyers. Like one of the things like you've seen in the past is you get like, just get guys in to do some cool shit and get the crowd like hyped up. AEW is not afraid to just put a match out there. And I don't think anybody expected Hangman Page and Switchblade Jay White to have some kind of high spot fest or like some match of the year level classic with the time allotment they were given. But I thought they did a phenomenal job. I actually gave this 4¾. I thought this was great. The story being built around Hangman's knee and having to second guess if it was worth the pain to deliver the buckshot, I thought was awesome. And Switchblade being a babyface, it's an interesting time for them to do it, but I'm all for it, especially with what we have on the heel side right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they could have executed this much better.
Yeah, I thought this was about as great of, I mean, as perfect of a match as you can get without being like a true five-star classic. I thought it was, I also went 4¾ on it. It just lacked that little extra oomph kind of putting it into the five-star spot, but I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it was really good. And these two worked really well together, and I think they are teasing them being involved again in the future, and not a problem for me. So let's go. There are some really nice sequences here with counters as you expect from Jay White. I don't know. I think maybe we need an extended period of babyface Jay White just to kind of get away from the kind of tired, I'm evil kind of thing that he's been doing for ever since he came in, more or less, outside of a brief false face turn with the Acclaimed. I thought this ruled.
Yeah, this was great. I also don't think it matters really for Hangman Page to take a loss here. He is kind of in this weird headspace after the Swerve Strickland feud culminating, and he kind of took things too far. And I think this is all going to be a part of his retribution arc as Cheddar tries to pop up again, and he's all fired up about Hangman Page. I don't think this hurts him in the slightest. I actually think it helps the way they went about and structured this match. Like, if it's just a straight up loss, you know, maybe not. But I think building it around the knee and him having to think twice about, hey, is it worth trying to get the kill shot on this guy because I have a hurt knee? And if it was Swerve, I don't think he thinks at all. He does it no problem. But I think it can be argued it's a continuing part of his story to kind of retcon what his behavior has been lately and how to kind of handle some situations outside of that extremely violent side that he showed with Swerve, which, let's be real, he believes it was warranted. And that's kind of the whole epitome of what the story is.
Yeah.
But I thought that little touch, and maybe I'm overthinking things just a little bit, but the little touch of him having to think about it, I think is really good character building stuff. And maybe that's like too much lore base, but I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I really liked the finish, which was Hangman going for the buckshot into getting countered by a Switchblade and
Blade Runner,
I should say. Yes. And I liked it a lot. So good for them. Great outing. And I do hope they get together again for another match because this was a highlight.
Yeah, this was awesome. Next match, I thought very interesting placement on the card because especially with how AEW has built their pay-per-views, this is usually like the tag team title match, or this is usually a high-profile match. This was not as high of a profile of a match as I thought they might do, and it was the AEW Women's World Championship match. Mariah May defeats Willow Nightingale. This was the best Mariah May has looked outside of the turn in All Elite Wrestling.
Definitely.
I don't know how much of that to credit Willow, because Willow might be like a top five star in this promotion. I think we've said that before. She's incredible. But this wasn't her story. Her story is beating Mercedes Moné. And she's taken a few losses. She lost the CML women's title to Vita Van down in Mexico. And she lost the feud to Chris Statlander, who is now a babyface inexplicably, which we can talk about that another time. But I thought Willow came out looking like a monster in a good way. Like, she's still a babyface, but she's got that mean streak to her.
Yeah.
And Mariah May matched her move for move, did not look out of place. It was, I think I need to be honest here, even though I think we can credit Willow with a lot of this. This was not a carry job. Mariah May held her own and looked great in doing so. But I'm curious, as we look forward to the rest of Mariah May's title run, how much are we going to credit Willow for how great this match was versus how good Mariah May was here? And I think that's going to be really interesting, because even though it wasn't a carry job, some wrestlers, like we've talked about with Ruby Soho, you put her against a great worker, she's going to be great. You put her against somebody who's subpar, she can't carry. And yeah, is it Mariah May rising to the occasion against a great worker? Or is it Mariah May has turned a corner and has started to really figure things out? I genuinely don't know, but it's going to be a storyline worth monitoring over the course of however long her title reign is and her stint in AEW.
Yeah, I thought this was a great match. And I, going into it, I thought it was a big opportunity, or really a necessity for May to kind of prove it, you know? And I think she did. I think she did successfully. She had a great match with Willow. Willow, I think, is fairly easily the best in-ring woman wrestler in North America. And is probably, I would be shocked if she didn't end up in my FSM 50 by the end of the year. But yeah, I thought this ruled. And May stepped up, so credit to her. She, you know, this was an all-action match, no bullshit, and it went really well. And this was exactly what I wanted to see from Mariah May, so kudos to her for stepping up and having a great outing. Willow naturally was awesome in the ring, and these two had a great match. I went 4.5 on it. Strong recommendation on that if you haven't seen it. Might be the best women's match in AEW this year. Great match.
Yeah, I want to see more Mariah May. I want to see more Willow. I think this might be the biggest pro Willow Nightingale podcast in the history of podcasts.
As we should be. Everyone should be as positive about Willow as we should. We are.
Are extremely pro Willow and extremely pro Swerve Strickland, and we were on those trains way before everybody else.
And Big Bill.
Oh, I want to talk about this because it was announced on Dynamite. I am very sad we don't get a Big Bill Brian Cage tag team, but we get a Brian Cage Lance Archer tag team, and that might be better.
I don't know about better, because frankly, you know, we do love the Big Bill, but Lance Archer is also awesome, so that should be a lot of fun.
I am a very large human. I am 6'6", 340 pounds. I am huge. I felt small standing next to Lance Archer and talking to him. And it takes a lot for that to happen to me.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a big, I do believe, technically speaking, but I'm glad he's still a fantastic worker. And I really hope they do give him something to do, because I feel like he's been woefully underutilized in AEW the past few years, and he's still got it. So hopefully we see more of him, in an active role. Off the segue, our next match was Katsuyori Shibata challenging Jack Perry unsuccessfully for the TNT Championship. Perry got the win with a real chicken shit kind of pinfall victory that I think it worked as a heel finish, but also took a little wind out of the sails on the match. But I'll tell you what didn't take the wind out of the sails of the match was Katsuyori Shibata. This was about the closest I've seen Shibata have to a classic New Japan peak run performance in AEW. He just beat the hell out of Jack Perry. Kicks and chops and everything, and just killed him. And it was awesome. I thought this was very good. It was not a super high-level match. It was very... I mean, I liked it a lot. I think I gave it 4 stars flat. Only air quotes there. Yeah, I did give it 4. But Shibata had a fantastic outing. On the other hand, I don't know about Jack Perry. This was, I thought, his best match since his return as far as single stuff. And I think he's just, I don't know. I've been a little let down by him. I talked about that last week. And I thought that there was a clear disparity here with Shibata just being a much better in-ring worker.
I want to fight you a little bit. I didn't think the finish was chicken shit at all. I thought it was just smart. Like, it's one thing for a heel to get a roll up and pull the tights. That, to me, that's chicken shit. But you get caught in a chokehold from Shibata, you know you're probably fucked. And instead, he uses that leverage to his advantage and gets the pin. I think that's smart and cunning, not chicken shit. Like,
maybe that's the wrong word to use, but
I think it's a good heel finish. I don't think like it's a good babyface finish, because babyface, you want to valiantly fight out of it, and like it's a smart finish. Like this is a finish that Darby would use, even though Darby is a white meat babyface, but it's also Darby, and the whole idea of Darby is he has to use his body as a projectile and be smart, because he doesn't have all these other things that the rest of the roster does. He doesn't have elite athleticism. He doesn't have size or strength in really any capacity. He's got to use what he has. So I think that worked. But I also think that works really well for Jack Barry, because he has some of those same size concerns. Like, when he came into the company as Jungle Boy, he was like 155 soaking wet. Now he's maybe up to like 180. And he still doesn't look like this imposing figure. And I think against a guy like Shibata, when he's got the chokehold in, I thought it was a brilliant way to finish this match, because it takes nothing away from Shibata. It's kind of like a surprise, like, oh crap, I'm getting pinned while I have this chokehold. There's really not a whole lot I can do here. Like, I thought it worked great. This was the one match I did not have over 4. I gave it 3.5. I really liked the finish. I thought it worked well for what both characters are. And it continues to establish Jack Perry as this heel, but he's not a wuss. He's smart. He's conniving.
Yeah. Probably didn't use the right terminology there. I don't think it really really got him over, I guess. I don't have a better way to put it. I think it felt kind of banana peely, I guess, is really what I'm trying to get to. But
banana peely, I can understand. But to me, I actually think it worked really well because of how you're trying to establish Perry as a heel. And it felt earned and smart rather than fluky.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that direction with Perry as a character.
But then we got a great, I guess I'm going to refer to this as one angle in the aftermath of this match. So Perry attacked Shibata after the match, and then Daniel Garcia ran in, went face-to-face with Perry, and Perry ran off. And then MJF came down, stared down Garcia. This was MJF's big return from a couple months off. Mm-hmm. And then Perry came in, attacked Garcia from behind, which led MJF to more of a beatdown on Garcia, cut a promo over him, obviously a heel promo. Said that Daniel Garcia's bidding war was just about as real as the Seattle Supersonics are. And then Adam Cole returned. Which MJF is big, so they're going to continue that storyline as we saw on Dynamite. And MJF ran off, Cole did his big Adam Cole Bebe thing in the ring. He helped up Garcia, they did a fist bump, and that was the angle. I thought it was really smoothly done. They tied everyone together really well, and I like this.
This is great, and I kind of like that Adam Cole is a babyface now. I don't necessarily think it's this big, huge, dramatic thing where, hey, Cole screwed over MJF and was this heel kingpin. Well, he got hurt, and then MJF came back and is now this douchebag heel again. Somebody's got to be a babyface. Nobody's going to give a shit if this is heel versus heel. And I think what you can do with Cole as a babyface, I think the promo kind of helped stir that pot a little bit, is he was a justified heel, where he was justified in being mad about the manipulation of MJF, and he was mad about the Brochacho stuff, and now he wants to get his revenge and beat his ass for kind of setting all of this in motion. I think you can make some logic out of that. Now, will there maybe be like gaps like, oh, come on, maybe you're stretching this a little too far, but I thought this was good. People want to like Adam Cole. Heel Adam Cole kind of blows. Like, I don't know. I didn't have as much of a problem with this as I think some other people did.
Yeah. I like this. Now, I will say that we don't want to talk very much about the Brochacho storyline and all that. I think it's for the best if we just collectively agree that never happened. That said, I think that this is the right way to handle it. You got to retcon it some, because really what we got was stinky. The initial storyline, it was really bad. We don't want to go back to that. So this is a circumstance where what we got here is better than the alternative, and it's a logical thing to have them continue to hate each other. And since MJF's a heel, it would make sense to bring back Adam Cole as a babyface to oppose him. I think this is a more reasonable way of handling this, their situation. And I think that you should have these two like this. That you should have Cole as the babyface coming back, and MJF as the piece of shit heel. And it's fair to play off of the old storyline that we had before injuries and all that, but I think reasonably it is for the best if we just do not go back down that path and have these two recreate like all the flaws of what they were doing last year. So
yeah, just get the end goal, get a like a dog collar match or something, blow this thing off, and let's move on with these two. I think because of how long it's taken to get here, I think you can honestly kind of do that match at any time. I don't think you need to have this long standing feud with these guys. I think you can have the blow off relatively soon. Maybe that comes at like World's End, because I think that's in Long Island again, which they are going way too often to that New York area. Like, I think they burned out the territory, but that's a whole nother discussion. And I think it's good. Like, they're not going back to Arthur Ashe for Grand Slam next year. That's going to be in Dallas, Texas. Like, you got to stop going to that area. I don't know, but like, it doesn't matter if you're hot, but
AEW ain't.
No, they're still selling good amount
for the pay-per-views.
Yeah.
In fact, let me check WrestleTix while I'm thinking of it. I forgot to grab that before we started. But yeah, this was a good crowd. This is a crowd that was really into everything on this show. So it was great, I thought, for what they were doing. And let's see. Latest on WrestleDream from WrestleTix is they had 7,628 tickets distributed, which is perfectly solid. We've talked about this before. It's not the pay-per-views that are the problem. It is the week-to-week television, and that is concerning. And you just have to really worry that that's not something that's going to happen, you know, or going to get worse or extend to their other business metrics, because you know they got the they obviously have the new TV deal locked up, and that should be safe for a few years. And you know, any kind of idea that they're going to die anytime soon is obviously ridiculous, but they probably would like to get their TV ratings up in the next couple of years, or at least keep them as strong as possible so that they can possibly get even more money. And, you know, it's this is the big question with them right now. But, you know, we're kind of covering this great show, so let's get back to that.
Yeah, let's absolutely get back to the show. And the next match, holy fucking shit. International title match, Will Ospreay versus Ricochet versus Konosuke Takeshita. This is the best three-way match I have seen since 04 and 05 when we got the absolute wonderful matches of AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, and Samoa Joe. And one of my all-time favorite matches, maybe not traditionally great, but Chris Benoit winning the title over Triple H and Shawn Michaels. That's one of my favorite matches. It's from my formative years as a wrestling fan. I love that match, and I watch it at least once a year. This was way better than both of those. This was guys beating the piss out of each other. This was, it wasn't tropey like a lot of three-way matches. It actually felt like everybody was kind of in the match. No, they didn't like everybody wasn't in the ring all at once, but you had Ospreay and Ricochet doing their little dance, and Takeshita's like, now fuck you, and just clothesline them both and be like, I love that.
Yeah.
And then the finish was brilliant too. Like, I'm not going to go move for move. They did some fucking crazy ass shit. It was awesome. But the package pile driver or the bastard driver, I think that's the specific name,
through
the table to eliminate Ricochet. And then you have the finish with Don Callis pulling the referee, which I think was perfect. And then Kyle Fletcher coming in using the screwdriver on the back of Ospreay's head. And that gets the finish. And then Fletcher hits the Tiger Driver 91 on Ospreay. This is fucking great. Like, I did not go five. I went 4.75 plus. But
coward.
Man, if you went five, I wouldn't. Like, I don't blame you. This was phenomenal.
I went 5.25. I thought this was fantastic. Going to be one of my top 10 matches of the year. Just a really amazing performance by all three. I'm glad Takeshita won. Hopefully that means that we're going to get Takeshita pushed as a real featured guy. I'd like that to be the case because he is phenomenal. And just comes off as a star. So, but this match just, I mean, so many fantastic sequences, so many fantastic moves. If you told me that you thought these were three of the 10 best wrestlers in the world today, I can really call you dumb by any stretch. I just thought they had a fantastic outing, and I thought it was really good. I love this match. I mean, I just loved it. I liked the turn. I thought it made perfect sense for the story they've been telling. I thought that Callis was a great shit heel. And I thought Kyle Fletcher's turn was really well done. So I liked a whole lot about this. So an absolute must-see match. One of the Match of the Year contenders, I think, on this year. And gotta check it out if you haven't yet.
I do think it's funny that Jimmy Jacobs leaves the company right before WrestleDream. And it comes out that he didn't believe in Konosuke Takeshita and didn't believe in a Takeshita push. And then right after Jacobs leaves, Takeshita wins the fucking international title. I find that very fun.
Yeah, I doubt it's like that direct of a connection, but it is a funny thing to see happen, given that report.
Oh, I agree that it's not a one-to-one. It's more like a Washington apple to a Granny Smith apple. There's some continuity there, but it's not completely. I thought this was awesome. Very cool. I hope AEW does more matches like this. Like when they do those all-star 6, 8, or 10 man tags, like those fucking rule.
Yeah.
Maybe they can just like put three guys in there and just maybe make three-way matches a rule. Like their thing.
Yeah. Like,
make it the thing that they want us to think the women's four-way match is a thing.
I forgot like, about that for a second.
Just be like, hey, three dudes who kick ass, be like, hey, just go do some crazy shit. Like, hologram Dante Martin and like get Gringo Loco in there to just change it up a bit. Like, how fun would that be?
Yeah.
Like, just do that kind of stuff. Like, those would be great pre-show matches, by the way. Like, I thought this was awesome. This absolutely ruled. And the turn was great. Fletcher, he's only 25 years old, but he's going to be a major factor for this company moving forward. I think they're going to be building Grand Slam Brisbane. or is it Melbourne? I can't remember which Australia city it's in.
I'm not sure offhand.
But they're going to be, he's going to be the centerpiece of that show. And I think he's going to beat Will Ospreay at that show for the first time. I think that's going to be what they're building toward. I can't wait. But I'm excited to wait because there's a lot more cool stuff to talk about on the show. One of those right after this, Jerry Lynn is backstage with Orange Cassidy, like hyping him up that you are the guy. I thought that was interesting.
Yes.
But it makes sense once you get to the end of the show because they're starting to set up a list of baby faces for John Moxley to beat. And maybe not just beat, but could potentially lose to. They're giving him challengers. One of the things when you have a title change, you got to have something ready to go for them once they win the title. And that's how some like long-term, like, hey, this guy busted his ass to get to the top and he had this great chase. Like Cody in WWE wins the title, faces AJ Styles. Really cool first defense, but then they did it again. And then they just had nothing for him. He's just a side character in the Bloodline stuff. Like, that's how you ruin a title win. And if AEW is getting things ready for John Moxley to have a really good title run, I think this is part of it.
I agree.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Now, right after this, we had a segment on a pay-per-view, which is very weird. And not necessarily with this crowd
un-AW-like, but I thought it worked.
It worked really well.
Yeah.
Swerve Strickland goes out there with Prince Nana. MVP comes out with Shelton Benjamin, and they try to get him to come over. He talks about the faults of Prince Nana, but then he says, well, without him, I don't have the AEW world title. He's family. I don't turn my back on family. And then Shelton Benjamin gets in his face and be like, we weren't asking. We were telling you. Mm-hmm. And then you get a pull apart. I think they discuss this really well on the reaction show on the Voices of Wrestling Flagship Patreon, where talking about how black wrestlers really looked up to Shelton Benjamin and how much of an influence he has. And I don't think we necessarily give him enough credit for that. Cause I think in a company that really, unless you were a Fatu or Fatu adjacent, you really weren't paid much attention to in WWE. And he really started to break out, but then that fateful super kick from Shawn Michaels kind of ruined his push in his career. But he was having some great matches regularly when he was the Intercontinental Champion with the T-Bone. And he was great. I also have a soft spot for him because he was a heavyweight wrestler at the University of Minnesota, baby. And I think it's really cool that they're kind of using Shelton Benjamin in a really nice way. You don't need to push him, but having him here, I think, is really cool and really important. And I thought this ruled. MVP just as a talker, that I don't know what
it is. Such a great promo.
Him with the suit and the walking stick just makes him look like a badass.
He's a total star, 100%.
And they did shout out MVP's match with Swerve and Defy, and that got a humongous pop out of the crowd because obviously Defy is based
big Defy presence.
Yeah, I thought this was awesome. They're gonna keep continuing this. We're getting Swerve versus Shelton Benjamin in like 1 or 2 weeks. I can't remember when they announced it because they finally started announcing things for Dynamite.
Oh my
stuff.
God.
Oh, it was great.
Jesus, finally. It was great. It's ridiculous to like wait this long and they've been struggling all year, man. And they just were finally like, oh, maybe we could see if announcing things ahead of time will help. Cool. Finally. Good
Four
Lord.
And a half star segment.
Yeah, great segment. I really enjoyed it. Really good stuff. I am forward to this feud, even though Shelton had a good match on Dynamite, but I'm not exactly kept up on Shelton in the ring right now, just because, I've seen what he does. And same with Lashley when he apparently comes in. We're still expecting that. I've seen what he does too, but it's going to be the storyline that really drives this, and we'll see if they can deliver a good one or not.
And you know what, it helps that WWE fans think they did not do the Hurt Business properly.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of meat left on the bone. This isn't some WWE retread. This is trying to take something that looked really cool and promising and delivering on it. And I think we're going to get to that with John Moxley, because I have developed a take after spending some time in the VOW Slack that I think works really well. I can't say that I was the brainchild behind it, but we'll get there.
And just steal that valor.
No, I won't do that. Next up, 2 out of 3 falls, Hologram versus LFI's The Beast Mortos. This is awesome.
This was really fun.
You could tell that the crowd wasn't really understanding of Hologram yet, mainly just because of the lack of exposure. Not a ton of people watched Collision. And then all of a sudden, they started getting into the match and they were reacting after things were happening, meaning that, like, the reaction, like, when Kenny Omega lifts somebody up for the One Winged Angel, there's reaction right away because they know exactly what's going to come. They know exactly what's happening. They didn't really know that with these guys, and I thought that was kind of nice. You could see how things were growing and things were developing. Like, I thought this was great. 4.25 plus. I did really think that Beast Mortos is so good as a base, and everybody has talked to that ad nauseum, but that helped really well here. Hologram almost botched a Poison Rana, but saved it.
Yeah.
Just really, really good stuff. Hologram did take a fall, but best 2 out of 3 falls. I don't think that matters too much. And Hologram's a pet project to Tony Khan. So we'll see. We'll see kind of how this develops, but I thought this was great.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought this was a blast. I think I went 4 on it. Wasn't really like a match of the year contender or anything, but I thought it was a lot of fun, really well worked. 3.75 actually. And I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Not a whole lot to say about the match, but you know what? It was good. Go watch it if you haven't. Next up, Fred, this match. Oh, I loved this match. Darby Allin versus House of Black's Brody King. I have a comp for Brody King. Brody King was every like 6-year-old in the late 80s, early 90s that got a Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy, and that's what Darby Allin was in this match.
Yeah.
Like, he was just throwing him around like a wrestling buddy. It was great. And I was live in the building for their coffin match at Quake at the Lake in Minneapolis, the special Dynamite, which had John Moxley versus Lionheart on it for the AEW title. I thought this was great. They beat the ever-living shit out of each other, and Darby ends up getting the win, which is important for what happens later in the show. But Brody didn't look out of place at all. He came arguably across as the bigger star to me than Darby, which is weird because Darby's from Washington.
Yeah, he's the hometown guy for sure.
God, Brody King rules, man.
He does.
Oh, he rocks so much, and I've wanted to see him get a bigger push, but
I hope this is it. I hope this is setting that up, because to just kind of tease it again would break my heart here. He is so good. And, kind of cutting in a little bit of news here. There's a debate in the Slack about, should AEW bring in Kevin Owens? Because his name came up as a potential free agent. And I think that, it's been reported, I do believe that Owens has re-signed with WWE. But I was in favor of bringing him in because I thought he could spice things up with his career. He could, I think he's still a good worker. He's a good brawler in particular, that age as well, compared to other styles. And I would have liked to have seen him in, but I also don't think it was like, if you don't bring him in, your company's hurt significantly. Yeah, I thought it was a moderate upside, low ceiling, or low floor, medium ceiling kind of move. But I would, and the pushback I got was that they could just use Brody King instead, as a guy that they could push in that spot. I would argue, hey, you can push 2 guys. I'd love to see Brody King featured more, and I hope that he gets a big spot soon. I hope he's no longer just treated as a muscle for the House of Black. I think he's really shown that he's more than that, and it'd be nice to see him used as more than that. So,
in regards to Owens, I was indifferent. I thought he could have had a really good run and done a lot of cool things with AEW, especially with this history with guys like the Bucks.
Yeah.
But I also like, I wasn't going to lose sleep over not getting him because I do think there's something to offer, but I also don't think it's like a big deal if he doesn't come. Like, I think it would have been awesome if he comes over with Sami Zayn and they like revive Steen Erico and have them just make a tag title run. And then eventually they have a real blood feud, not like what they had in WWE. But I think there's stuff to offer. But you know what? There's so much talent on this roster right now. You don't need to bring him in. You don't have to. You don't even like, it's not, you're not losing anything really by not bringing him in. You're like, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be fine. I would have been excited particularly by him having more freedom on, like being able to do more or less whatever he wanted in AEW to a certain extent, I think, versus WWE's very kind of structured format when it comes to interviews, generally speaking. I'm sure that he gives is given more leeway than most, but still, I think he would have been given even more leeway. And I think he's a fantastic promo. So that was what I was really hoping for. But hey, can't win them all.
Yeah. And you know what? I can live without it.
Yeah, it's fine. But yeah, this Brody match, Brody Darby was really good. I went 4.25. And Darby won, but Brody looked like a monster throughout. So that was really well done.
Yep. Next up, AEW World Tag Team title match. The Young Bucks defeat Private Party. They set this up to try and make Private Party look really good and look over. The video with Amazing Red, who trained them up in New York, was awesome. And Private Party, here's the thing. You've done so little with Private Party over the course of the last 5 years, basically since they had that awesome match with the Bucks in that tag team tournament to crown the first champions. Nobody gives a shit about Private Party.
Yeah,
nobody does.
They should have tried to push him more. They didn't heat them up enough. You know, they tried to do it a month, and what they really needed was 3 or 6 months of getting over. So, but they didn't
have them win matches every single week on Collision.
Yeah, or just like every other week. You know, even just so we don't like kind of burn it out. You know, but still, it's
I do feel bad for Private Party because Mark Quinn has been hurt like a lot. And that's really hindered anything you could have possibly done with them. And they tried to keep Isaiah Cassidy involved with like the Matt Hardy stuff. But that ended up not really being a great thing because, well, it was Matt Hardy. And thank goodness he's not with the company anymore. No offense. But like there were so many things that they could have done to make this match feel more important towards the fans. And they didn't.
No, that this was a failure in terms of that. Now, match quality, I thought it was pretty good. Yeah, I went 3.75. Like, it doesn't suck by any stretch. It was solid, but, you know, I expect a higher level of big match from the Bucks. I don't think it was really that Private Party is too, like, not good enough to get there or anything. I thought the crowd didn't believe in them, and that hurt the match. I thought this was the coldest match on the entire show, at least the main show. And, I thought that really did drag the match down some, but it was still good, and I enjoyed it. It was a good outing. I would not be opposed to more Private Party in a featured spot, but God, they need to be built up before they get right back in the tag picture, but or title picture. But I don't think we're getting that. I think they're just going to go right back into it for a rematch.
Yeah, I think they are, but I also don't think that's necessarily the worst thing because they just had that title match. Because they had the title match, they were close. They did hit the gin and juice. Isaiah Cassidy was really good as a babyface at the end of that match, fighting valiantly, kicking out of the EVP trigger and needing two TK drivers in order to get the pin. Like, I thought he was really good at the end of that match. I thought, you know what? I get it. They're not where the Acclaimed was a couple years ago, where that all-out match in 2022 was an all-timer.
Yeah.
They should have won that night. They should have called it in the middle of the ring and be like, no, this crowd wants this. We need to make the switch now, even if it wasn't. It wasn't like that kind of feeling. It wasn't there. And I wish we would have gotten. I wish we would have gotten something a little closer to that, because then I think that could have been really special.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I think the Bucks have frustrated a lot of people this year. I still think they've had a really good in-ring year. I think both them and FTR, it's not like they both disappeared at points and everything, but I think both have put on really good matches consistently through the year, and mm-hmm. I think that's kind of getting overlooked with those guys. But I also think that the Bucks this year and some of last have also dipped into like looking a little checked out or just not performing at the level you're used to. And I think this was kind of an example of that. I'm not putting the blame on them, and I'm not putting the blame on Private Party. I think it's actually really more of a booking issue, a booking shortcoming. And I think that hopefully they address that and do better, you know, with, I guess, phase two. We'll get to Dynamite here shortly. Yeah, kind of frustrating, but good match, really, when it get down to it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to kind of phrase that. We need more from the Bucks, let's just be real. Semi-main event. Interesting slotting for this one. Mark Briscoe defeats the Learning Tree's Chris Jericho. I liked this a lot. This was Mark Briscoe defending the honor of Jay, who Chris Jericho, obviously being the brilliant heel that he is, that just kept invoking his name. And you know, backstage that was okay.
Oh yeah. 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 There's no way. Look, Chris Jericho is whatever flaws he does have. And he has some, I think he would not just like go into business for himself and start, start bringing up Jay's name the way he did without clearing it.
Mm-hmm. I thought this was great. It was extremely hard-hitting. Briscoe beat the piss out of Jericho and then hits the J-Driller to finish it off. I thought this was great. You had a little bit of interference with the Learning Tree and the Conglomeration coming in, but I thought it was awesome. Like, 4 stars. Yeah, I enjoyed this a lot.
I think either 3 3/4 or 3 3/4 is what I gave it. Yeah, it was very good.
Yeah, just great stuff. Interesting placement, though, is the semi-main.
Yeah, I thought both it and the Bucks match would be earlier in the card. I actually thought the Bucks would open or be second. And I thought, you know, Jericho's match would be around 4. So it is interesting these two were so late, but.
Yeah. Really interesting card placement on some of these. I would have thought Hangman Page and Jay White would have been that semi-main spot. But I also think that having this and then going into what was the main event, I actually do think it worked really well. And the main event, Jon Moxley does defeat Bryan Danielson for the AEW World Championship by choking him out with the bully choke. I love this. I gave the match 4.5 stars. I gave the post-match 10. I thought it was great. I love this gimmick, and I can't take credit for it. Kevin Herron, the voice of Wrestling Slack, go check out the Wrestling 101, where they've been putting together like the ultimate guide of each kind of match. They've been doing a tremendous job with it. It's highlighted on the voiceofwrestling.com. He said that the Jon Moxley stuff is what people wanted Bray Wyatt to do. And I think that that's a perfect description. And it's not spooky. He's obviously leading like a cult style leader in the way he's talking and presenting himself. Mm-hmm. And I thought the little promo in the back of the truck on Dynamite was perfect, like a perfect description. The Wheeler Yuta turn was that way as well. You could just tell he didn't want to do it, but he felt he had no choice and he had to listen to this guy who was otherwise going to kill him.
Yeah.
And he chokes out Bryan Danielson with the bag. God, I love everything about this. It's just Claudio and Pac are just ass kickers. Marina Shafir, this might be the greatest usage of her in the history of anything.
I hope she does not wrestle a match. I hope she is just the ass kicker for the BCC. I hope she doesn't even bother with a women's division. Just kills dudes, you know, when every opportunity she gets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she just beats ass. She wears tight clothing because she's in phenomenal shape.
Yes,
and she just has this look on her face like, I'm going to kill you. And then she does.
Then she did it a bunch.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's fucking great.
This was a really good match. It went 4.5 on it. We're going to put air quotes around the retirement of Bryan Danielson here, and we'll get back to that in a little bit. But I want to talk about the BCC angle. I thought it was phenomenal. And when this show was over, I had convinced myself that they had potentially set up something akin to the early days of the NWO, when it truly felt like that they would just destroy, like, they just were an unchecked force that would destroy everything in front of them, and was very revolutionary in that way. And I, this is kind of on me. I had hoped that they would use this opportunity, and I guess they did a little bit to an extent, but hopefully they'll emphasize it more going forward, that they would use this opportunity to kind of freshen up Dynamite, because with Dynamite, they've very much fallen into a kind of a rut with how they present the show. I think there's, you know, obviously you got matches, and then you do the interviews in the one spot backstage. It feels like you have a guy go to the announce table about once a show as a guest, maybe every other show. And you know, it's those are fine basics, but what I've always loved about the early days of Dynamite is, you know, you would use the entire arena, felt like. You know, you had the angle where Cody punched through the glass pane of the door of the box suite to get after Jericho on one of the very early episodes. You had Moxley's debut was on Dynamite, was and also the pay-per-view, but especially the Dynamite, was he did a run on Omega and brawled with him halfway across the arena and then put him through a glass table. You don't need the glass. That's not the part of 42 here. Though I realized I just referenced two angles that use glass heavily. I did a little bit of that by using the whatever that entry unloading area was with the angle with the Dark Order and Top Flight. But I'd like to see more because one of my all-time favorite segments is the infamous NWO beatdown of a bunch of people that had Kevin Nash just lawn darting Rey Mysterio into a trailer backstage back in 96 or whatever it was. And I mean, that was a fantastic and crazy bump, but also like it was just the dynamism of it. And I really hope that AEW is able to capture that and that they can use that to freshen up and liven up their show some. And hopefully they do. I don't think they did quite enough of that on Dynamite this week, and we'll get to that shortly. But yeah, I think there's a real chance that this could be this could turn into a big angle if they handle it correctly. They did some very good things on Dynamite. I don't think everything was perfect, but you know, at some point, it's a difference between headcanon, you know, what you hope for, and what you get. So,
oh man. I love this so much.
Yeah, this is a great act. This is a really great act. It's one of the best acts they've had in a long time, I think, because it feels very, very lively, very real. It doesn't have a level of artifice to it. It feels like that Mox and Claudio and Pac, who only ever wears his trunks, and Yuta and Shafir would just want to kill dudes. As some kind of twisted version of like Fight Club or whatever, I guess. So it was cool. It was really cool to see.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I loved the post-match angle where you get all the baby faces come out. That felt very NWO. The fighting in the back segment where they were just throwing people around, that felt very early NWO, as you said. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of when they were at the Disney Universal Studios for that short time. And the shot forever of Kevin Nash lawn darting Rey Mysterio into the production truck like they gave me those kind of vibes. And then the opening montage of Dynamite where Moxley is talking about how AEW's lost its way and it's all about celebrating and like dances and
the truck promo. Yeah, that ruled.
That was so good because you can feel the realism in there. You can feel like this is what Mox believes. You can buy that he's not filling you with a bunch of bullshit. It just feels legit. It feels like he truly believes everything he's saying.
There is a seed of truth there for sure.
Oh, 100%.
And wrestling's always a little better when you get that involved.
Mm-hmm. And then you have Wheeler Yuta, who's sitting next to him with a very uncomfortable face. And Marina Shafir is just smirking the whole time, like, fuck yeah, this is great. Like,
just loves killing people.
I think this has been so incredibly well done, and I want to see them continue with this. This feels like what Tony Khan really wants to do with wrestling. This feels what Jon Moxley really wants to do with wrestling. And I think that's why AEW had so much success early on, because they were in lockstep. And, man, imagine being CM Punk realized, man, I gave this up. Holy shit. Like, this is phenomenal. I just want more.
Yeah.
I want more.
Let me pick my nits here. And this, you know, this could just entirely be something I think, and I could just be on an island here. I really like that truck promo. It was a fantastic promo. It felt very real. I would not have opened the show with that. I would have saved that back sometime in the show. And my biggest pet peeve about this Dynamite, it wasn't a real problem, I guess, but it was a shortcoming, is that they have this massive angle where Bryan Danielson, again, we're air quoting here, retired. You know, Moxley killed him, and Danielson was stabbed in the back by Yuta and everything. I think that they had to open up Dynamite basically with them running wild. Now, I think they had to attack and kill someone, basically. Maybe have a match start and then 5 minutes in, kind of like they did with the conglomeration elite match. I just want to start the show with that, because I think that the way they did it for 45 minutes is that they did not emphasize the big angle. And that was a real fall, I thought. I thought that it would have been much better for them to have, coming out of the pay-per-view, the big thing is BCC. And what they did to Danielson and what they're doing to the AEW. They should have had them come out and continue that immediately. Instead, we kind of forgot about them for an hour. Now, that set up the drama of the invasion, the run-in they did. I get that. I think that would have worked better in week two or three. You can't open every week with them doing a run-in and killing people.
Why not?
Because if you, you know, it'll work for a little bit. But if, you know, we're both older, you remember the NWO angles, you know, they got very repetitive after a while. So you can't literally do it every week.
Okay. I want to present a counter, because I do think that they should do it every week. And here's why. One of the key selling points of that angle was the Elite was out front. Cheddar, you need to go, buddy. You're trying to sit on Dad's lap, and you are not a lap dog. You are a long boy.
That is a very large dog.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's only 45 pounds, but he's just very tall and long. So he looks really big. But one of the big selling points about this angle, Fred, was the fact that the Elite was on the apron and could have done something about it and didn't.
They made a big deal out of that. I like that. I did like that a lot.
They made a huge deal about it, and especially because it's going on in their company, and then Daniel Garcia called out the Bucks. This is going on in your company. What are you going to do about it? Why are you back here? Why didn't you do something? I think the end goal here is going to be the Elite take a stand, tell these guys to fuck off, and they have a massive feud. And that ends up being like blood and guts next year, something like that. But I do think by having these kind of things happen week in and week out, and the Elite not doing anything about it, eventually radicalizes them to do something. And then that you get like a baby face turn of the Elite. Maybe that's too early because we are at about to get the impending return of Kenny Omega because he's announced for Wrestle Dynasty, him and Tanahashi versus the Bucks. But it feels like that is going to be something that we're going to continue to see because of the reasons I just stated. Like, they could have done something, they should have done something, because they are like EVPs in the fucking company, and they didn't. I think this will continue until they end up doing something. That's my theory.
I think that that's going to be a big part of the angle. Two things that I think. One, they can't be the ones to stop it. I think that they have to fail, but they still come together. Two, I'm not convinced that it's going to be Okada as part of the babyface turn. I'm kind of iffy on if he'll be involved. I do think that what they should do is they should have the Bucks in particular declare that they're going to try to stop the BCC eventually. And then Jack Perry stabs him in the back or abandons them or does something super heelish. Not because he's joining with BCC, but just because he's a big scumbag. And they should emphasize that. But there's a lot they can do with it. It's a really fun angle that you can play with. And there's so many cool scenarios that you can come up with. I think that, you know, just a couple ideas I've had, and this is fully fantasy booking, so sorry. But I do think it'd be cool if after, like, a couple months of not being involved, like, Brody King just comes in and gives them a hell of a fight. I think you could definitely set someone apart, kind of like Sting. Not literally like hanging out on the rafters, not doing anything for a while, but you could have someone, and I think it might be Darby, be the guy kind of positioned as the person who, after 6 or 12 months, is the person that defeats Jon Moxley and is the one to kind of fight back and stop the BCC. I think that'd be a great way to establish a major babyface. And I think Darby's the right age for that and is the right guy for it. I think there's, yeah, you could do like an underneath feud with someone on the come up, possibly, or just a mid-carder looking for something to do to specifically call out Wheeler Yuta for the way he betrayed Bryan Danielson. That's a hook you could use. I just think there's a lot of dangling storylines to play with here. They did a great job of incorporating the Elite. I thought that was really good how they gave them an angle into this and made them a key player without directly involving them yet. But on the other hand, and I do think it's cool that they have Dark Order and Top Flight like saying they're going to fight back. But they got to get killed. They got to be murdered dead by BCC pretty fucking quickly. Just because they aren't, you know, they aren't high level guys. So and Evil Uno in particular is great at if you remember him getting squashed by Jon Moxley a year ago or whenever that was in that very bloody match. I thought that was a great performance, and I think that'll be another great way to use Evil Uno again.
Look, the Dark Order is great for stuff like this because they've been around since pretty much day one of the company. Mm. And having guys like that who, let's be real, they become fan favorites since the passing of Brody Lee, and they can be like stewards of the company, and it doesn't matter that they get absolutely destroyed.
No, I think that's absolutely fine in that spot.
I think that's a great idea. I'm just so intrigued by all this, and I just hope that they take the best of what the NWO was and what could have been with the Wyatt family stuff and not screw it up.
Yeah,
because of who's involved here. Because the end of this is going to be Bryan Danielson putting Jon Moxley's head on a stake. That is the end goal of this. How long that will take?
Do you think so? Because I honestly thought, I mean, obviously we'll get Danielson back for revenge. I actually thought that the end point would not be that so much as using it to establish a new top guy, a new top babyface.
I think that's more of the midpoint. I think you do that.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay.
Because I think that this is going to last for a long time, and there's going to be different arcs with this thing.
Yeah.
Where I think Darby Allin's going to win the title from Jon Moxley.
I do too. Yeah.
But I think this ends like there's a lot of different things you can do here. I think it's going to last.
I got you now. Yeah. So after the title is lost and, you know, BCC is still around as a major force, Webb Danielson come back and try to get mm-hmm. revenge.
What's really interesting, and I want to talk about this, is Moxley disregarding the AEW title without disrespecting it. I thought it was tremendous. They put it in a bag. They beat the piss out of everybody and they left. He didn't trash it. He didn't throw it down. He's like, okay, I won this. Cool. Now let's do what we really came here to do. I thought it was
That was a perfect. Cool aspect.
I thought it really suited the Jon Moxley character. I thought it suited what this angle is. I loved it. I'm so fired up about what this is going to be, Fred. I want more. Yes. The only thing I don't want is Shane McMahon coming in.
Oh, God, no.
I had a buddy who I shared the video of the promo, and I'm like, I love everything about this. And he's like, can't wait for Shane McMahon to come in and bankroll the whole thing. I'm like, no. Oh, God, please never. No. Like the Michael Scott from The Office gif where he's just screaming that Toby is back. No. Keep him away from this. You know what? If you want to bring in Shane McMahon, fine. Keep him away from this.
Shooter
please,
Shane.
For the
my
love
God.
Of God, Tony, do not let Shane McMahon be involved in this. We did get confirmation from Meltzer a couple weeks ago that McMahon is not in the plans for what this storyline is, which, thank God.
Yeah, it'd be such a fake way of doing it, of having like, oh, but we have to have someone bankrolling it for some reason. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Now, I'm not completely heels in the dirt. No way should Shane McMahon ever appear on AEW TV. I don't know what he brings to the table because he can't work and he's really not a great promo. It ain't 2002, y'all.
AEW Underground, let's go.
God. We ain't exactly talking about the heart business here in terms of
misused
WWE ideas. Oh, boy. But, like, this is absolutely the wrong idea here to try to make it a Shane McMahon is actually the secret mastermind using his lockbox to fund the BCC. Good Lord, no.
Lockbox.
Sorry, I was popping myself basically. Now, before we get to Dynamite, a couple news notes that I do want to drop real quick. We did mention Jimmy Jacobs being gone, and like I said, I don't think we're really going to see much of a change in AEW directive. I think that, or creative, I should say, I think what we're going to get is, you know, maybe a little less of his influence, but there's reports that he barely had anything to do with creative. He was too busy being like an assistant to Tony Khan. Now, how true is that? I don't know. You never really know. I do want to caution AEW fans to not accidentally or on purpose turn Tony Khan into Vince McMahon in the sense that it's Vince that has the good ideas. It's just everyone that's around him is bad. The flaws of AEW over the past year, 2 years, very much fall at the feet of Tony Khan. He is the head of the company. He is head of creative. It is up to him to keep that stuff on the straight and narrow. He's certainly able to collaborate with whoever he wants. I think he's probably arguably collaborating with too many people. I think it's just, you know, there's reports that he's like talking with 25 people, literally. You know, there's some question about how literal that number is. Anyways, I think that, you know, you need a tighter ship, a smaller circle is better, personally. But yeah, I just want to like pump the brakes on the whole, like, this is going to be a panacea to the creative of AEW. I think Jimmy Jacobs' ideas weren't really what didn't really always fit AEW from the little reports we did here. But I also don't think it's going to be a cure all by any stretch. Two injury notes, and then we'll get to Dynamite. Powerhouse Hobbs is about ready to return soon. He had surgery on his patella tendon. He had a fantastic first 3 or 4 months of the year, so I'm happy to hear the news that he's coming back. It'll be interesting to see where he ties into things, if he'll be part of the Callis family again. I'm inclined to think maybe not, given that they just added, apparently, Lance Archer and Brian Cage. But, you know, I guess they could keep him in there. It just seems like that group is pretty much at max size, I think, for people to be featured. But I guess they could add Hobbs and make it a trios chase. I don't know. And the other injury news is that Dalton Castle is done for the year. Back on in July, if you remember, his last time he wrestled, he was knocked out during a match with Roderick Strong. But then it came out that he has a torn biceps. So he's going to have surgery. That was his real reason he's been out. Castle said that he's thinking that January he'll be back, so we'll see how that goes. One interesting note is that he talked about that match with Roderick Strong in an interview on the podcast, Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend. And this is a quote from Dalton Castle via F4W Online. It was the last match I had, just a little freak accident happened, and then it hurt. I was freaking out. The guy I was wrestling with took a cheap shot at me or just took advantage of the situation. I don't know. It sucks. It sucked because I was supposed to go hiking the next day in Calgary. I lost the match, then I lost my hiking trip, and now I spend every day in physical therapy, and then on the weekends I go antiquing, so that's where I find my happy place, buying old mugs. And then he later clarified that the injury was not Strong's fault, but commented that he didn't back down after. I don't know how much of that is kayfabe, because I could read that as kind of kayfabe leaning, but, you know, just a little, you know, wrestling fans do love their drama, right? So, just something to take note of. And then we get to Dynamite.
Hey, I want to share this. I'm really sad that Dalton didn't blame the boys.
They should have.
That would have been tremendous, but maybe he couldn't because of the lawsuit that.
Oh yeah, that might be. That's probably a good point. I do hope that Dalton is recovers soon. I always enjoy him as an on-screen guy. And now we're on to Dynamite. So I thought this was an okay episode. I think it was like a 5, maybe a 6 out of 10.
Not what you want coming out of that kind of pay-per-view.
No. No, and I think that's a big part of why I wanted the big angle from BCC at the start of the show to at least keep the through line going, you know, to keep the energy up. I felt like that they kind of did too much of a business as usual show after that big angle, and I thought that just it kind of missed the tone, if you will, of the show. That said, I thought, you know, every match on the show was good. I think I gave like just about every match either 3 or 3.25 stars. Like the FTR match was fun, but it didn't get to like a really good point. I thought Queen Aminata had a nice showing against Mercedes Moné. It was starting to get to like a real highlight level match, and then it ended. Another one that I just thought was a little too short. I'm just going to knock out all the matches now. We already talked a little bit about the Conglomeration against the Elite, where the Conglomeration won by DQ because the BCC ran in and beat them up, and the Elite did not help. I thought it was a really cool way they had Wheeler Yuta be the guy to run in and hit the Busaiko knee on Orange Cassidy, and they shot that really well, I thought. But that was
a really nice touch.
It was a nice touch. I thought that it was kind of underwhelming match, but maybe they, you know, given 10 more minutes, they would have been really good. Shelton Benjamin, Leo Rush was very solid. I'm glad Leo Rush is around, and I hope he does stick around. There's a report that he signed, but Leo Rush does have a history of walking away from the business for just taking extended periods off. So I really like Leo Rush. I don't think he gets enough credit. I think he gets too much shit to take his time, that time off. I think he's a fantastic worker, a great talent, so I'd love to see him around more. And main event was Christian Cage against Jay White. This was solid. Did I give this... I'm trying to remember if I did actually give this... I didn't rate that. I forgot to put down a rating. Oh, no. Update spreadsheet. Oh, no. Paddock. I think that was like a 3.25 match is what I ended up with. Nothing that I'd really like put over big, but nothing bad by any stretch. Just kind of just a little flat, frankly. You know, it definitely could have been better, but it wasn't. Now I'm going to mention this about the main event, is that we had a very funny thing happen where Kip Sabian did a distraction on Christian Cage because they're doing this storyline where he either wants to join Christian Cage's group, but Christian doesn't like him or something. I don't know. It's weird, and I don't think it's really working particularly well. God bless Kip Sabian. But the idea was that after the distraction, Paige was going to take out Jay White. So basically they have Kip do the distraction, and then Hangman pops out from underneath the ring and looks up and then does not get in the ring. So he goes back down. The announcers are confused. Cage and Jay White just go into like a really nice finishing sequence. Maybe this was 3.5. I don't know. It was one or the other. It doesn't really matter. And then they get the Kip distraction again. And then Hangman does take out Jay White so that Christian gets the win. Twice, we got these very funny shots of Adam Page laying on the ground next to the ring, trying to hide. But like he's like super on the ground and very close to the ring, but he's not under it. And he's just got these crazy looks on his face. And both are going to be fantastic reaction shots. But kind of a funny botch. I don't know whose fault it was, Kip or Page, or no one's, you know, it's hard to say, but it was a funny moment. Not intentionally funny, but funny all the same. But yeah, the angles on this show, I think, were the real highlights. You know, and I thought that some of them were good and some of them underdelivered. I think we talked about the BCC enough, so I'm going to focus on the other angles. I thought that there was a Don Callis promo with Kyle Fletcher, which was supposed to kind of be like the big, like, Kyle Fletcher's evil now thing, right? But it just was really, there's nothing to it. And you also had it wasn't really a big distraction, but there was a little bit of distraction just that Brian Cage came out with him, which he had not been with Callis before. That was kind of unaddressed, or at least underaddressed. And, you know, he mentioned that they wanted the tag titles, but it still felt kind of like overlooked. And then the Kyle Fletcher thing was just like, you guys, he did the you people promo. Which is not what he needed to do, because the motivation for Kyle Fletcher was pretty clear. He wanted to stab, you know, for whatever reason, he wanted to stab his friend in the back. And instead he was just like, oh, you fans don't deserve to know why I did this. And I'm like, brother, can we just not repeat WWE stuff here? You know, that was kind of crappy. But I did enjoy the tease of Kenny Omega possibly coming in. You had the Outrunners run in to celebrate with the FTR after their match. It was fun. Just such a fun group they are. Chris Jericho set up Ladder War next week with Mark Briscoe. That will probably be good, because the smoke and mirrors will help Jericho with his age and his declining in-ring stuff. But the other really big angle was that we opened with Adam Cole cutting a promo on MJF. Now, you know, without going back to my, they should not have opened the show with this, they should have focused on BCC thing, I thought this was okay, but not a strong promo from Adam Cole. I thought it was kind of meandering and not particularly focused. It didn't feel strong. And then you had MJF do his I'm in a fancy room brooding thing on a pre-tape and talked about how he was smarter than Cole and it wasn't his fault. And it was like kind of stuff we've seen before. And then Cole says that he'll find him and beat him up. It was fine. I didn't think it was particularly a home run. There's better stuff in these two, both, I think. And we had the Acclaimed promise to get some championships. Then MVP tries to recruit them. They turn them down. So Caster did take the card. You know, I don't know. The other angle is that Stokely, you know, Private Party challenged the Bucks again. Bucks put them over, but said that they were not ready for a championship match. I got a little confused here, but I think at the end, they basically said that, you know, Stokely came in and, you know, said teased that Zay was going to be positioned for a single star and that they should have taken his help and they would have been champions if they had. And it came up one way or another that if Private Party fails to win, you know, that it could end up being that Private Party will put their team on the line against the Young Bucks. And if they fail to beat them, they would no longer exist as a tag team. I think that if I was Mark Quinn, I'd really hope that they didn't do that. that they did a breakup, because I don't know what his future in the company would be as a solo guy. Isaiah Cassidy, I think, has some potential, but I don't really know if he'd like come out to be like a top of the card guy. But that's kind of my recap of Dynamite. Anything you want to add? I know I just went San Jose Steamroller on you, but
hey, shout out San Jose State, who
that was a Dave Meltzer joke, but
I had sure. money on minus one this past weekend, and they lost to Colorado State, which is an atrocious football team. But no, I think you encapsulated it well. I kind of gave my thoughts on Dynamite, like the big picture ones, throughout the course of our review of Wrestle Dream. I almost said World's End again. That you can tell.
Well, fortunately, I have never said the wrong name for anything ever, like our email address or the website where you can give us money or anything.
Speaking of, check the show notes, redcircle.com.
Oh, yeah.
Search this and you can give us money. You can also directly Venmo me, and I might give Fred some of it. We'll determine that at a later date. Anyways, thank you guys so much for listening. Give us a 5-star review on whatever podcast app you listen on, and give us some money. Fred needs new shoes.
How would I get new shoes if you don't give me the money? One note that I do want to share before we go. One more news thing I forgot to mention earlier. Very funny thing happened where someone posted a fake match preview image of Konosuke Takeshita and Mascara, I think it was. And everyone went wild over it. And then AEW had to say, no, this isn't real. We're not doing it right now. Like, that had to come out. But then Meltzer reported that he talked with someone in AEW, was like, oh, we probably should do that match. So I think a strategy we're going to have to undertake, Tyler, is just to make match graphics for cool stuff we want to see and then post them on social media and hope that they take off.
I like that. I like that a lot. Give me a Big Bill versus Marco Stunt match graphic, please.
Yeah, I would be okay with that. Marco Stunt, I'm perfectly happy with Marco Stunt showing up like once every 3 months just to get killed. I did enjoy him coming back for that Jack Perry match. I wouldn't be opposed to him being around more often.
That was phenomenal, and it had a lot of story interweaved in it, which you're not going to get with a lot of squash matches. Just do more shit like that. That's cool.
Yeah.
In the meantime, make some more cool match graphics. I'm Tyler. He's Fred. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great night.
Take care, everyone.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and the Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.